Good afternoon. My name is Ken McDermott-Rowe. You're listening to In Context on WPKN. This is WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Candivero.
Hey, everybody.
And doing double duty behind the board is our military affairs commentator, Marchand McDermott-Rowe.
Good afternoon.
And this is being the last Monday of the month, and we're on every Monday except the first Monday of the month from noon to 1 p.m. This being the last Monday, we're going to do our monthly roundup of the global war, which we call the War Report. Before we get into that, I want to note that on April 9th, we're going to have as our guest David Samuels, founder of Connecticut's Community Party. He's going to talk about a very important issue, racial profiling, and some new legislation that's being considered in Hartford regarding that. He's also going to talk about the public banking movement here in Connecticut. And now we're going to start today's show with an interview we recently did with the global affairs analyst Rick Rozoff, who we've had on the show live before. We talked to him about the progress of the war in relation to particularly into Syria and into Africa now. This show is also available.
Uganda and Sudan.
Yeah. And it's also available on YouTube, this interview.
Yeah, right, it's on our YouTube channel. Go to YouTube and search In Context Report, and you can find all of our videos. We do a weekly edition of the War Report and the Liberty News, covering a variety of issues, the elections, the economy, personal privacy, food freedom, nutrition, all different kinds of things. And this last one that we did a combined Liberty News and War Report because it kind of covered everything. And the Kony 2012 phenomenon is something that we talked about, and we're going to give all the details of that. So is that queued up?
All set.
Okay, so we're going to go to that, and you can find the full video. This is kind of excerpted, but go ahead, play it.
Phenomenal video, Kony 2012. And we'd like to look today at a little more detail what this phenomenon is all about.
Just to catch up the audience, I'm sure since this is going to be on YouTube, they all know this already, but the Kony 2012 video has gotten many millions of views. And for those of you who haven't seen it, it's a very slickly produced documentary. It tries to purport to be something that's a grassroots effort, but it looks to me like it's got a little bit too much financial muscle behind it to be something that is what it pretends to be. And that's just an activist citizen who is really concerned about human rights in Africa. And that's, of course, something that people need to be concerned about. But this, the answer to the problem of Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army is to send United States military in to intervene to prevent these atrocities from taking place. But many of the things that's not mentioned in the video, and this video has gotten many millions of views, is that Joseph Kony may not even still be alive. He hasn't been heard from in many months. And they've moved out of Uganda into other countries such as Sudan. Now, the United States previously was not interested in intervening, and it is a part in the film where they actually go to Washington and they get the talk to the hand, you know, that most people usually get when they go to Washington, and you know, showing that they're these heartless individuals. They don't care about you know, child soldiers and such. But then now that they're in Sudan, all of a sudden there's interest in Washington in intervening, and we have all these Hollywood celebrities getting behind, getting on the bandwagon. Quickly, what's your thoughts on the LRA, Joseph Kony, United States intervention into Sudan? Is this just another geopolitical ploy to try to grab the resources in Sudan?
Yes, it is. But you characterize them, I mean, your background is perfect. It truly is. It places things in absolute correct perspective. And this comes on the heels, of course, of the Obama administration deploying an initial contingent of over 100 special forces troops to Uganda, Central African Republic, Democratic Republic of Congo, the general area, ostensibly to exclusively, you know, fight against the Lord's Resistance Army. This would be the first, you know, openly acknowledged military campaign in Africa since the war against Libya last year by the United States, and its latest, the first post-Cold War overseas military command, U.S. Africa Command. Though I suspect, and I've recently had occasion to write about the fact that the United States is engaged in a counterinsurgency war in Mali, in northwest Africa, and of course it has, you know, a large military base in Djibouti in northeast Africa, the Combined Task Force Horn of Africa. And the fact that this video surfaces precisely at the time where Washington is starting a counterinsurgency operation comparable to what it's been doing in the Philippines, incidentally, as well as Colombia and other nations. And, you know, 21st century, at least, you know, post-George W. Bush administration, American warfare consists of, you know, unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, and special operation forces. Those are the two major emphases. And this would be a test case, I suppose, and this Kony video is a perfect public relations, you know, effort to legitimize that, you know, that effort.
That's right. The group who put out the video is called Invisible Children, and the video, which has gotten at last count 76 million views, which is a phenomenal amount of views in a very short period of time. The video was only uploaded on March 5th, and to get 76 million views for a political operation in that short period of time, I think it's pretty phenomenal. Normally, you get something that's a funny video of someone either hitting someone else on the head with a brick, or, you know, maybe cursing, or little kids swearing, you know, something like that. Those usually get tens of millions of views because that's what really caters to the American attention span. But for something like this, especially a half-hour documentary about the turmoil going on in the world. Pretty phenomenal, I think. At first glance, looking at this video, it's a very slickly produced video. I did research into them and found that they were getting funding from USAID, which is a known CIA front, though any mentions of USAID on their website have been scrubbed as far as I can tell. And I think what we need to really know here, or really get into, is why all of a sudden all this attention on Joseph Kony. Joseph Kony is the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army, hasn't been heard from in several months, and he was most active in a place in Uganda, and then been pushed out and was moved around, and eventually moved into Sudan. The American government, as portrayed in Kony 2012, was not interested in any intervention in Uganda. But now that it's in Sudan, everyone's all for it.
Well, Marshawn, yeah. What is this movement all about inside Uganda?
Well, the Lord's Resistance Army is like many, many other resistance movements within Africa, the RUF and other such movements out of Sierra Leone and the like. The Lord's Resistance Army is about, they want to topple, Joseph Kony wants to topple the Ugandan government and create a ultra-Christian utopia. He's a Christian fundamentalist. His organization spawned out of the Holy Trinity movement, which was founded in 1987. The Lord's Resistance Army grew out of that. And it was most highly active under Joseph Kony's leadership in the 90s. Joseph Kony believes himself to be...
Which is 20 years ago.
Which was 20 years ago, yes. Believes himself to be the new Messiah and a prophet. And his army has been involved in some of the worst atrocities, mutilations, the chopping off of limbs, cutting off lips
stuff.
And ears.
Yeah.
But what I find fascinating is he was doing this in the 90s. So it's really kind of bizarre because it's like if we suddenly decided to get involved in Cambodia to stop any elements of the Khmer Rouge, which was active in the 1960s. It's bizarre.
Better late than never.
Better late than never, yeah. It's really bizarre when you look at it. It's like, you know, we're going to go into Vietnam and stop the Viet Cong. The war's over.
And at this point, he knows no longer believed to be in Uganda?
Well, the Ugandan army, which has been getting funding from the United States, fought against Joseph Kony in the 90s and early 2000s, forced him into hiding. He fled across the border into the Congo, fought the Congolese, then the Central African Republic, and then the Southern Sudan. Now, the whole while, what's been keeping Joseph Kony alive, because he has no popular support, he's despised, he's a despot, he's been getting supported by the Sudanese government to fight against the Ugandans, who the Ugandans support the independence of South Sudan. Now,
this is the government of Sudan in Khartoum that's allied with China.
Exactly. So it's vicariously the Chinese are fundamentally supporting, because Khartoum doesn't move without permission from the Chinese. The Chinese were supporting the Lord's Resistance Army because we support the Ugandan government.
Now, why do the Chinese have such an interest in Sudan?
Well, Sudan has a lot of oil.
Wow. But Uganda has nothing. So that's why we didn't care when people were getting their arms cut off in Uganda. But now all of a sudden there's a big to-do about Sudan because they've got the black gold.
And the U.S. government projects that an enormous amount of American oil will be coming from Africa in the near future.
And what's brilliant about this is because the borders are so fluid. And it's even better than the Taliban because the Pakistanis don't want us. If the Taliban's in Pakistan, the Pakistanis don't want us coming into Pakistan. Mm-hmm. The Iranians don't want us coming into Iran, even though they don't like the Taliban. The Taliban might flee across the border. What's really interesting is the Lord's Resistance Army crosses what is fundamentally a very fluid border between Uganda, Central African Republic, the Congo, and South Sudan. And he's so hated and feared. He's the great boogeyman. But now he's the great boogeyman without any teeth because his army is so dwindled, mm-hmm. but he's so feared.
And he may be dead.
He may be dead.
We have no idea.
But he's so feared that the Ugandans, the Central African Republic, and the Congolese will give us free reign to send an army in to control the region.
President Obama has already sent a small
100 advisors.
100 advisors, special forces to the region. And yeah. I think our concern is that this film may be an effort of CIA propaganda in order to build populist support for much larger U.S. intervention.
Let me ask you for a second. Just think about this rationally. Why on God's earth, when UN Human Rights Watch in the 90s, UN Human Rights Watch was saying, we have these atrocities going on. The RUF is murdering people in Sierra Leone. We have people getting their lips and faces chopped off. And the Lord's Resistance Army is doing all this horrible stuff in the 90s. We did nothing. In the 2000s, the early 2000s, we did nothing. Then all of a sudden, out of the blue, suddenly we care? And one was under a Democrat president, one was under a Republican president, so don't tell me it was just one president's fault why we didn't intervene.
Yeah.
Republicans, Democrats, didn't matter. We didn't give a flying you-know-what until now. Suddenly we care. And I'm sure it's not philanthropy that we suddenly care.
I'm sure not. Well, I think that's going to do it for this quick hitter episode. Thanks for joining us. Subscribe to the channel, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon. If you just joined us, you're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM. We are WPKN's live public affairs call-in show, and we just played for you a recent interview with geopolitical strategist Rick Rosoff, where he talked particularly about his specialty is U.S. NATO's military expansion around the world, and he was talking about Kony 2012 and how that really fits into the expansionary policy of the military of NATO and the U.S. One of the important concepts is that U.S. has something called AFRICOM. We divided under President Bush Jr. Africa into military districts and created something called AFRICOM. I think it was about 2005. And why did we do that? Because the U.S. government understands that in a very short time, we're going to get a tremendous amount of our oil, something like 20% in the next decade or so from Africa. And it's been stated quite clearly by Admiral Mueller recently at a 2008 AFRICOM conference. He said, openly declared AFRICOM's guiding principle as protecting, quote, the free flow of natural resources from Africa to the market, at close quote. And he also cited China's increasing presence in the region as challenging to American interest. So what we try to do on the show is when you see the headline, like a huge phenomenon on the internet, like Kony 2012, is to try to figure out what's really going on here. Gus, would you like to comment on Rick's remarks?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Rick is very, very smart and very well researched when it comes to Africa. So, you know, I certainly take his, agreement with our analysis of the film, to be something I'm very proud of, you know, cause I didn't get his opinion before I gave him my opinion. I just told him what I thought and then he responded and said that I was correct. So that to me is, you know, I'm very proud of that. But, you know, to give a little more detail about the film, because people need to know about this. If I'm sure that they've heard about it, it's been everywhere, really. The way that it got all the views that it did in such a short period of time was that the Hollywood types who were connected with this guy, his name is, I think, Jason Russell. He's the director of the film. He got Rihanna, the pop singer, to tweet the link to this video, and then followed up with several other singers and Brad Pitt's, Angelina Jolie. She also tweeted it and made a video about it, and you know made some remarks on a red carpet about it, and then it just got tens of millions of views.
Yeah, this had
days.
Real serious push behind it.
Yeah, and it had Hollywood behind it, you know, right. And it was mentioned on I think Entertainment Tonight, and you know that. As soon as it happens, it starts getting retweeted and, you know, going viral through Facebook and everyone recommending it on YouTube. And then it's to the front page within a day. And then it just self-perpetuates. Now, all of a sudden, everyone can see it. And once it gets to the front page,
and certainly
it just
these
grows.
Hollywood figures are sincere in their concern
sure.
about cruelty in Africa, as anybody should be moved
absolutely.
By. But there is probably another
motive. They're being used. Rihanna
used.
Is not sophisticated enough to know the point behind this video. She just sees that poor African children are being mutilated. But she doesn't realize that the point of this is to get the American military in there so that we can colonize another region and get AFRICOM and NATO involved and, you know, further take away American government's control of our military to give more of our soldiers and more resources to foreign governments. And, you know, she just doesn't understand because she's not sophisticated enough to understand the sure. propaganda play here.
And if listeners aren't familiar with the region we're talking about, it's on the east side of Africa, central. And if you look at Sudan, they go to the southern part of Sudan, you'll see that Uganda, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and all come together in kind of a triangle there. And particularly the Congo is immensely rich in resources. It's another place that that we definitely want, we covet. It has huge deposits of diamonds, cobalt, copper, uranium, magnesium. It produces over $1 billion in gold each year, and it has practically no effective government. So it's just ripe there for the picking.
In the video, I put graphs in there so you can see where Sudan and Uganda stand in oil production. And Sudan, I think, is 18th in the world in oil production and right around there on oil reserves.
Right.
But Uganda has no oil production but has, I think, the 30th. Or the 33rd ranked oil reserves. So they have oil. It's undeveloped. Now, people keep in mind, it takes a long time and a lot of money to get to the oil and bring it to the surface and get production going. So I don't think that this necessarily is about getting at Uganda's oil. I think it's about an excuse to intervene into Sudan, which already has a large oil production and is largely tied to the Chinese.
Of course.
And I think that's part of our power play. Is it's a statement as much to the Chinese as we want to beat the Chinese to it. That's why we split up Sudan to begin with, why we
right.
supported the partition. It really had nothing to do with philanthropy. Because
yeah.
when you, whether you look at the plight of the people in Darfur and in southern Sudan, or you look at Joseph Kony, you realize that this stuff has been going on for over 20 years, and we really didn't care. And this seems to bother no one. We didn't care until now. When the Chinese get an interest in the region, suddenly we care about the plight,
yeah.
the humanitarian plight.
And this oil in Uganda
people.
Was only discovered, I think, about a year and a half ago.
Exactly.
So it's very recent. I saw this funny picture on Facebook someone shared with me. And it's, you know, that typical iconic picture of the American eagle looking straight forward with its beady eyes, you know, looking really aggressive.
Right.
And it's usually like in front of an American flag. And it's like the typical USA first type image. It said, Uganda has oil. Get Kony. And it's this American eagle in front of a flag. You know, it's very, very funny.
I wish we just, our politicians were brutally honest for once. Like,
yeah.
you know, we want the oil. Let's go take, like the Romans or the Brits, you know. The Brits said
yeah.
South Africa belongs to Queen Victoria. You know, no there, bones about it. We're imperialists.
There is
Let's
this,
take it.
There was this funny movie called The Invention of Lying. It came out a few years ago. You'd really like it. And in the movie, it's a society where no one can lie. Everyone just tells the truth exactly what they intend. And it's like, you know, so the guy goes to his boss and he says, you know, look, you really don't pull your weight around here. No one likes you. And I think I need to fire you, but I'm too cowardly to come out front and confront you. Right? So this guy, it's Ricky Gervais. He's the first person to invent a lie. And he goes into the bank and he says, I'm John Sanders. And they say, oh, you are? Oh, well, here's all your money. So he just takes all the money out of the bank, right? So he realizes what he can get out of this. And I imagine if people were like that, what would they say? If they just came out right and said, you know, these poor African children, even though they're no longer in danger and they don't need us anymore, it's a great excuse for us to go in there and steal all of their resources. So we're just going to go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't how refreshing that would be?
That would be. Why don't we just get rid of Congress and we just install the corporate lobbyists in Washington
yeah.
and pay them directly? We'd save a lot of money.
But skip the middleman, right?
Exactly.
Pass the savings on to the consumer.
Well, we'd like to know what you think in our listening audience. Give us a ring at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. Or if you prefer, you can drop us an email to ken@mdrtalk.org. So the phone number again is 203-336-9756. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with my fellow host Gus Cantavero and our military affairs commentator Marchand.
I just want to quickly mention also that the guy, the director Jason Russell, he has since been admitted to a mental care facility because in Los Angeles last week he was seen in the nude, in the middle of the day, disrupting traffic, pounding his fists on the sidewalk, screaming incoherently. And potentially self-abusing himself. This is many eyewitnesses. The police were called. This is a report. He is in the mental care facility. He's going to be there for several weeks. And this happens right as soon as it looks like some action is going to start happening on behalf of his campaign. So I can't imagine that somebody would go nuts and lose their mind right on the precipice of having his life's work fulfilled.
It seems very strange. I'm wondering if somebody slipped him something for some reason to get him out of the way. Who knows why?
I would think so. That seems the most likely. I mean, there are known to have many drugs, many injections. We even have microwave guns that can stop someone's heart at a distance of 100 yards. You just aim it directly at them, and you can just inject sounds into their head to make them feel like they're going crazy. You know, there are very, very strange weapons out there that we know little about, and I find it very
it's quite
peculiar
a
and coincidental that he's now in a mental care facility and can't answer for many of the discrepancies in his film.
Well, it's very interesting that in Africa, we have largely been working through surrogates. And as Rick Rozoff has documented in his essays, and you can read them at globalresearch.ca. That's globalresearch.ca. Global Research is a think tank headquartered in Canada. He carefully documents all of these bilateral and multilateral agreements the United States has with various African countries. And for example, Rwanda, we use as a surrogate to fight in the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Mm-hmm.
And Uganda we've used right in Somalia. So,
yes.
So essentially, we pay Somalian soldiers a lot of money to go fight for our
Christian Somalia. And March indicated in the video that we played, which you can find at our YouTube channel, In Context Report on YouTube, is that the Sudanese were using the Lord's Resistance Armies as surrogates to fight against the Ugandans.
Exactly. And by extension, the Chinese were using the Lord's Resistance Army because Khartoum, as I pointed out, doesn't move without its go-ahead for approval from China, very much like North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very clear if you look at the fact that this is a turf war, but we have been fighting through surrogates. You know, we get the Ugandans to go do something for us. We get the Ethiopians to invade Somalia for us. You know, we have troops in Ethiopia and in Djibouti, which neighbors Ethiopia. And so, but now I think because the Chinese are getting more serious in their investment in Africa, they're sending advisors to Sudan and the like.
And all the world powers have these surrogates that we use. The CIA has assets all around the world, and they have countries who they have leverage with that they then use them to ship arms or trade money or weapons with other countries that we want to destabilize, right?
Exactly.
So times of coincidence,
like
of convenience.
Qatar, for example, is one, a very close American ally, that was reported to have shipped something like 1,500 fighters from Libya, the radical Wahhabi al-Qaeda group, the Islamic
the people who supposedly attacked us in 9/11.
And when Gaddafi said that he was being overthrown by al-Qaeda, he was actually right. And these guys are being sent by our ally Qatar to the Syrian border. Presumably, they may even be in Syria now, undermining the Syrian
reports
government.
I've read in Russia today say that they are in Syria, and that 1,500 is a very conservative estimate. There may be as many as 3,000 to 4,000.
Wow, that's a lot.
Currently, they've been shipped in from Qatar, from the United Arab Emirates, and the amazing thing, and this is how.
And they're taking up residence inside people's apartment buildings.
Oh, well,
making the people human shields.
Taking up residence would be putting
it
mildly.
Kind?
Yeah, it's, you know, the guests.
You can have the guest bedroom.
Exactly. You know,
would you your sniper rifle out of the kitchen? You know,
shame in public.
Please, no guns at the dinner table.
But Webster Tarpley visited there late last year, I think in November, and he reported that snipers were taking positions in residential neighborhoods and just shooting civilians in order to provoke the crisis.
Oh, of course, because, I mean, looking at this from a purely rational perspective, if, you know, and I'd like our listeners to just entertain this thought for a minute. If we had, you know, you had a bunch of guys in New York City in a residential area of Manhattan or Queens or the Bronx, and they were taking pot shots at the police, they were taking pot shots at civilians, they were firing, I mean, these guys have RPGs, rocket-propelled grenade launchers, anti-tank weapons, and let's say they were firing on blowing up police vehicles and stuff. Wouldn't you kind of ask the National Guard to come in or the federal troops to come in and knock these guys out? And of course, let's say the guys don't move. Let's say the guys don't leave and they're firing RPGs at the police. You know, the army's going to come in and have to blast them out. And so what this is doing is it's creating consumption, media consumption for the American people, because the people in the Middle East know better for the most part. And people in Europe
to an extent, depending on where you are, know better. But Americans see flames, they see explosions, and then you have some info babe, as I like to call
it. With no context either.
No context, no. And they always say, we cannot confirm this video footage. It's just very scary looking. And you take some... So
I have a good comparison. Go ahead.
Take some info babe, and she's standing, and she says, yes, I am in Beirut. Now, I've traveled to the Middle East quite a fair amount myself. I can tell you for a fact that I've been to Cairo, and if I'm in Cairo, I have no idea what the hell is going on in Palestine, because the Middle East is big.
She may as well say, I'm on planet Earth.
Exactly. You know, you could do the exact same report from Tokyo and get the exact same effect. Yeah. But go ahead.
No, she's just saying, I read on the internet that the government is shooting civilians.
Exactly.
You know, like, that doesn't really help. But and as a comparison, do you remember the PET bomb that Farouk Abdulmutallab, the underwear bomber,
yes,
was allegedly... outfitted with, underfitted with.
Underfitted, yeah.
The government, the FBI, did a video demonstration of what that bomb would have looked like if it worked. All right,
now
let's put that in quotations, air quotes, because that it didn't work, and it didn't work. Okay, it wasn't put together correctly. It didn't have the right amount of stuff in it. It was the idea of a PET underwear bomb, but it wasn't. It wasn't a bomb. It just fizzled. So they said, here's what the bomb would have done if it went off correctly. But that's like saying...
It's bizarre.
If you have an empty hollow shell of an A-bomb and you throw it out your window and it makes a crater in the ground, and you say, now let's watch the video of what it would have done if it really was an A-bomb, there's no comparison between the two.
In addition, in that case, we're talking
one's
about...
One's not a bomb. One is a bomb.
This was exactly. In the Detroit-bound plane that the man who supposedly was going to set off the bomb was, according to an eyewitness, escorted on the plane by someone who appeared to be an official, even though he didn't have proper documentation, which
yes, it was Kurt Haskell. He was the Detroit attorney who was on the plane with his wife, also an attorney. He was in the waiting area, waiting to board the transfer from where were they? The Netherlands? I forget.
I think so.
It was Western Europe. But anyway, they were coming back to Detroit from Africa, and he had been aided by a dark-skinned, sharp-dressed man. That was the way that he was described in the media. And they had security camera footage of him. He came up to the booth. The boarding agent would not allow him onto the plane because he didn't have a passport or proper identification. So he left. He came back with this guy, and he said, don't worry, I'm from the State Department. We do this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and talked to a supervisor, and the next time Kurt Haskell saw him, he was on the plane. And then trying to light his underwear on fire.
And, okay? You know... One of the things you have to wonder...
And that was never admitted into the court.
It was never admitted into the court. And one of the things I find fascinating is that typically when you have a crime committed in, you know, the civilian world, in the real world, and somebody goes and, you know, murders somebody, you bring all the witnesses in. You want police take every witness statement. That's all relevant in the case. And also, this guy's trial was, and correct me if I'm wrong, it wasn't a public trial. It wasn't a, you know, they didn't have television cameras in there. They didn't, you know, the guy never really got to make... a defense. In fact, if anything, I heard he was also, I read actually, and this is in several prominent news sources, that he was mentally incompetent.
Completely. He defended himself. He didn't even take the public defender. And in fact, many people offered to give him free advice and he wouldn't take it. And the only person who he was going to call as a witness was Kurt Haskell, the eyewitness on the plane that Mutallab tried to kill. And Haskell was excited because he wanted to be able to tell the story of the person he saw help him get him on the plane, because he pitied Mutallab. He believed Mutallab was unable, mentally unfit to stand trial. And and also that there was a lot of warnings about him getting on the plane from Mutallab's father, who alerted the State Department to say that he was falling in with the wrong people and that he was afraid for his safety and so forth, and that he was aided onto the plane by a government official. And why wasn't all of this stuff brought out into light? Instead, he defended himself, did a very poor job of it, and said that he was proud of what he did. I mean, what an idiot.
Well, and you know, that does call into question. I mean, and the fact that, you know, I'm taking right now a forensic science class and a criminal investigation class at the local community college. And one of the things they teach us is they say that physical evidence is more important than eyewitness accounts. And you cannot convict somebody alone on their testimony. Like, for example, if a guy says, all right, I admit it, I did it, you cannot convict him on that.
Yeah, he's mentally unstable, clearly.
But yeah, by law, you have to you have to have evidence. Even if the guy is mentally sound, if he admits to a crime and you have no physical evidence, you have to have something to corroborate his statement because he could be covering for somebody.
And taking that, he clearly is taking it further. Where was the video of the airport terminal where this other guy aided in getting him on the plane? Why wasn't his name found? Why weren't they going after him as an accomplice?
Exactly. Are you telling me that suddenly the cameras in the airport, these glorious cameras that they have,
they never mentioned it.
It certainly looks like this event is staged. And why does the government stage these events? I mean, we on the show have been looking at this, starting with 9/11, which we've done several shows on it, and it certainly appears that those buildings were brought down and controlled demolitions. And similarly, the government has been completely disinterested in pursuing the good science that's been presented. Why are these things done? Well, just this week, Attorney General Eric Holder has expanded and resurrected essentially what was Bush Jr.'s Total Information Awareness Program, this huge data mining program. Yeah. And they said the reason they got to do it, why they have to have so much data on Americans is look at our failure to catch the underwear bomber. That's why we need this.
But we were
warned.
See, and that's such a lie because we were warned about him. We had intelligence on him. Well, and the FBI even came out and said that we sometimes let people fly who we know are a threat just so we can see what they do.
Of course, it's disingenuous, but it allows the U.S. government, Obama, to extend the period for which data can be held on people who are not suspected
you
of
and
being
me.
Terrorists from 6 months to now 5 years. And they built this huge new intelligence center.
This is supposedly the liberal candidate that everybody is putting all their hopes and dreams on.
Well, this is it. He's built a $2 billion center. It's expected to open in 2013, a $2 billion national security agency center in Utah, which is they're going to be there to collect information on you and me. And people who think that Obama is different from Bush Jr. really need to study what's going on.
Now, this is just like in Mars Attacks when the aliens are going down the street with the loudspeaker saying, come out of your house with your hands up. We are your friends. And then they come out and they blast them.
Yeah.
So this is the liberal candidate who's going around saying, I am your friends. Put down your weapons. Do not oppose me. And then you come out of the house and they just blow your head off.
And I think a lot of it is people don't want to. It's very hard to face the reality that, you know, this guy, a lot of America's, you know, hopes and dreams. It was the empty vessels, I've heard, you know, Ken often say, you know, that everybody put their hopes and dreams into. He's going to fix everything. He's going to change everything. And then all of a sudden you find out he's just as bad. And I think to a lot of my friends, especially, I talk to them about Obama. It's just too depressing to comprehend because we live in a society where we forget it's a republic. We forget the fact that, you know, we're not stuck with Tweedledum or Tweedledee. We have the chance to vote. And we have not only the chance to vote, but let's say we don't like either of the candidates. We can write in. Or we can nominate a third party. Ross Perot almost made it. He was third party.
And you also have a chance to speak on the air. Please give us a call if you'd like to chime in at 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. You're listening to In Context, WPKN's live public affairs call-in show, 89.5 FM, and we're streaming live at WPKN.org. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with the fellow host Gus Canavero and our military affairs commentator Marshawn McDermott Rowe.
You know, the situation that we have is something where people are brainwashed into thinking that they don't have an alternative, because what's the one response we always hear? Well, who's the viable third-party candidate? Well, it doesn't really matter who's viable, because the word viable is just what the media tells you is viable. So it's just whatever popular support is
self-fulfilling.
And at that point, if you go with, you know, we're only going to go with what's viable, I mean, you might as well live in a dictatorship. I mean, honestly, if you are going to, as a citizen of a republic, allow the media to dictate to you, well, this candidate's viable. Oh, you can't vote for Ron Paul. He's not viable. You can't vote for the Green
Nader,
Party candidate,
whoever.
Nader, because he's not viable. If you start to accept that, well, then you might as well give up your right
because
to vote.
We need a second party in this country.
You know, the real question, I think,
I didn't pick up on that.
Shouldn't be, you know, who are you going to vote for? It's if you could vote for anybody, who would it be? And most likely, it wouldn't be Romney, Santorum, or Obama. It would be anybody else.
And what
so if 70 out of 100 people guaranteed would not want to vote for one of the main candidates,
right,
but yet they do it. Why?
If you look at the issues, what are the great issues facing our country? This war, you know, should we return to a policy of non-interference, or should we be involved in wars all over the world? The Federal Reserve, should the Federal Reserve, essentially a private banking cartel, control our economy?
Should healthcare companies write our healthcare legislation, like the Obamacare?
Or in the broader sense, should the large corporations control our government? don't we deserve to have at least one candidate in the race who will come out on the populist side on these issues?
And we do have a candidate right now who doesn't get corporate sponsorship, but people don't see him as viable, and that person is Ron Paul.
And 4 years ago, before that, Dennis Kucinich ran, and he, on the Democratic side, similarly represented the people,
you know,
completely ignored by the mainstream press.
In the 2008 campaign, on the Democrat side, the people who I liked the most was Mike Gravel and Kucinich.
Right.
The two, like, angriest people.
Right.
You know, and then on the Republican side, it was Ron Paul. And it was the three angriest people.
And that really, see why they're angry.
And that reflected me.
It
wasn't these other guys who were slick and smooth, you know, Kerry, Obama, Clinton on the Republican side, Romney, and, you know, was the governor,
Huckleberry
Finn. What gives a lie to this phony left-right liberal-conservative dichotomy that's set up and reinforced by the mass media? It isn't a left-right thing. It's a populism versus corporate control of our government.
Yeah.
And the populists, are some of them are conservatives, some of them are liberals, the Democrats, the Republicans, but they're not getting a fair place on the stage.
And this primary process that we go through is not to find the person who's the most popular, viable, as the media calls it, candidate. It's to find the best person to lead us. It's not to try to narrow down our team so that we can win at the end. You know, that's so stupid. This team mentality of right versus left so that we can score the most touchdowns is not the way that you get public policy written.
And that's why I think we have to get rid of this notion that, oh, I identify myself as a liberal, or I identify myself as a conservative. Personally, I don't identify myself as either. I identify myself as a citizen. And I think, you know, I've been studying revolutionary France and ancient Rome. I think we should address each other as citizen, because that's what we are. We are citizens. Yeah, we are citizens in the Republic. But we are citizens.
I understand the idea behind it.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think, because I think about it, you know, how few people actually realize that this is an involved country. The government, the president, even once elected, cannot just go and make decisions. You know, he wants to pass this, the NDAA, which is nothing short but a, you know, authoritarian, totalitarian
system. Just to review, the NDAA, this was a recent...
The National Defense Authorization Act, which allows for the detention of Americans, which now by executive order allows for the assassination of Americans.
By executive order, not a vote or anything like that.
Nope, by executive order, not with the consent of the American people. The president decided, like a king or a dictator, that I have the power to kill any American citizen. That's any of you folks, that's any of us. Kill us. Bury us in the backyard, you know, whatever.
And the NDAA gave him the authority to have the military arrest American citizens and put them indefinitely without charging the military.
Exactly.
Custody.
It's like a third world country. If you read about this stuff going on in China, you read about this stuff going on in some of the banana republics in South America, you know, the government just arrives at your house in the middle of the night, handcuffs you, you disappear, and they push you out of the back of a plane like they did to that bishop in, where was it? It was Chile? Was it that bishop? What's his name?
I'm thinking of Romero in El Salvador.
El Salvador, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
We just passed
the anniversary of the assassination of him. And what was his crime? He was speaking out for little people. So a sniper shot him while he was saying mass.
We may as well have the National Cement Shoes Punishment Act, you know, where they pour your feet into cement shoes and walk you off the end of a pier, because that's what this is turning into. It's a mafia. Look, Ken, if you don't have anything to hide, what do you have to fear?
Right, exactly. Take my rights. I wasn't using them anyway.
And that's why we have to realize that, you know, there is, because people say to me all the time, well, what can we do about it? What can we do about it? People have to realize that we can do something about it. We don't just have to lie down when the president passes these laws. We can go out and protest. We can vote. We can say we want a referendum. We can call that. Most people, I'm sure, don't even know what a referendum is. We can have a referendum. We can, where we all, every single one of us, has the right to say, we don't want this. Or we don't want you. Impeach him. He's a criminal. He's violated the Constitution. Throw him out. And in fact, some of his violations constitute high treason. High treason, which is a crime for which he could go to Guantanamo.
Well, you're invited to air your views by giving us a ring on air, 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. Tell us what you think. Obviously you don't have to agree with us. These airways belong to the people. So whatever your point of view is, you're welcome to air it on In Context.
Now, these executive orders are just one's worse than the one before. You know, and this is it's exactly the same as George Bush. People need to get this through their heads. They keep thinking that they're going to be just voting against the Republicans. You know, that's all you're doing. You're not voting for anything. You're just voting against somebody else. I'm just waiting for the next executive order for, you know, Obama to come on TV and say, I did not make myself president. God did. You know, like the divine right of kings.
Right.
You know, I mean, I saw the movie Robin Hood the other day, you know, and they were talking about the Magna Carta. The people wanted the Magna Carta passed, and he came out and said, I did not make myself king. God did. And with the divine right of kings, you owe me tribute, you know, taxes. So we need more money to wage war. So we're just going to raise taxes. And that's all it was. And the people, of course, got upset. But, you know, I'm just waiting for that moment where that crossing the Rubicon moment where the president becomes dictator, becomes Caesar. You know,
which that's actually a very apt analogy,
and not one I came up with. I can't take credit for that.
And we have a caller. This is Matt from Long Island. Go ahead, Matt. You're on the air with WPKN.
Matt, thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? I've been wondering about that. I mean, recall elections. I have two issues. Recall elections are possible in certain cases. Are they available to voters for any federal election positions, meaning senators, congressmen, even the president?
I'm pretty sure. For anything I don't know about for the president, but for Senate and representatives, yes, and governors.
So we could actually start a recall campaign.
Well, I mean, didn't they have a recall election in Wisconsin for the governor?
The governor, yeah. I don't know about
that. Yeah, but that's a state thing.
Good question.
I'm not sure. I was just wondering about that.
Who would you want to...
The things that are going on are treasonous, and I don't know why there's not a movement to deal with it on that level.
I think it's because that team mentality I was talking about a few minutes ago. No Democrat wants to admit defeat because people are too obsessed with having their team be the winner. You know, it's all about getting the most seats in the Senate or the House.
Right.
And no one wants to sacrifice anything and make the Republicans look good. But I don't care what the party is. I just want someone who's honest.
Lyndon Johnson had Eugene McCarthy challenge him and Senator Robert Kennedy because of the war in Vietnam. Where are people like that today challenging the war policy of a Democratic president?
Well, yeah, I mean, Ron Paul's about the only one. I mean, they're all in step with the powers that be, and that's really, really sad.
Well, we thank you very much for the call, Matt.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, he's right on. You know, I think that the reason why the Democrats aren't challenging Obama in the reelection is because they don't want to make it look – they don't want to weaken their stance. And I think even – Kucinich was threatened when it came to the Obamacare bill. He was taken on a plane ride with Obama. By the time the plane landed, he had changed his vote from against to for.
Is that and he ended up losing his seat.
And
anyway.
He ended up losing anyway. So he sacrificed for nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
He sold himself out there, I think, and I lost a little respect for him.
Yeah.
I don't know what conversation took place there, but they still sold him out.
Right.
You know, he sold himself out, and he didn't benefit from it.
You might as well go down with your guns blazing.
Exactly. No, you go down standing, not on your knees.
And I think that's one thing we forget in this society.
Should we also talk about the protest in Tel Aviv with the Israelis marching against the war with Iran? Because this just shows that it's a populist movement and that the governments are the ones who are bringing us to war and that the people don't want war. I think people want production. They want creativity. They want love. They want reproduction.
So what's,
they don't
happening,
want
what's happening in Israel? What's doing with
well,
the
protest? Well, there's a massive Facebook movement that's gone on between Iranians and Israelis where they are exchanging images with each other, with their faces saying that they don't want war with each other, that they love each other, that they like each other, that they want to be friends. And, you know, there's slogans in these images that say no to war with Iran and talks, not bombs. Here's a note one Iranian wrote, and he said, my Israeli friends, I do not hate you. I do not want war. Love, peace. You know, what more can you say? This is what the military industrial complex wants.
Well, I think it's a classic example because it happens throughout history. You ever want to understand what's happening now, what's going to happen in the future? Look to history because, you know, the American people didn't want to go to war in Europe in the First World War. They didn't want to go to war in Europe or the Pacific in the Second World War. Yet We were dragged into it.
No citizen wants war.
That's right.
And the Israeli people know. I mean, I'm sure Benjamin Netanyahu and Ehud Barak, the defense minister, and all that lot have, you know, bunkers underneath the Knesset. But I'm sure the average Israeli is thinking, geez, if this goes badly,
there's a pattern there.
Bombs
falling. Isn't there? 1898, remember the Maine? It turned out the Maine was not blown up by a Spanish mine. You got the Lusitania, which turns out did have munitions on it. And the Germans warned us they would shoot it.
And people who were going to be war advisors.
That's right.
The passengers on there were military employees.
And so it was a pretext to start World War One, and then World War Two. You have Pearl Harbor, which, as William Stinnett has shown,
we knew it was going to happen.
We knew it was coming.
And all the decommissioned ships were there instead
of the
active Navy.
That's right. Because the smoking gun he found was a memo, which it was said, we want to provoke Japan to war because that way we'll automatically be in a state of war with Germany.
Yeah.
And, of course, we had Vietnam. That was another con job with that incident in off the coast of Vietnam with the phony naval attack on the American Navy, the Gulf of Tonkin.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Right. And we have, of course, 9/11, which is probably...
Speaks for itself.
Looks like it's the mother of all false flags.
And now with the people who allegedly attacked us on 9/11, it's never been proven, were of Saudi Arabian descent. Yet Saudi Arabia is one of our big allies in the Middle East, and Saudi Arabia does everything that they can to screw us when it comes to the cost of oil. Right now, they're slowing production of oil to increase the cost and increase their profits. Yet all the people, the Wahhabis, who are these fundamental extremists in Al-Qaeda, we're using them as surrogates in places like Libya and Syria
and
Iraq.
That's my favorite example. And that's how, you know, we don't look into exactly what our government's doing or look very much beyond. And the media, we can't look at the media to tell us anything because, you know, there's the media says, oh, well, these Libyan freedom fighters, the MTC. And if you just look beyond the surface, just a little beyond the surface, you realize – these guys are all Al-Qaeda affiliates. They've all worked with Al-Qaeda. Many are Al-Qaeda veterans. Many are Al-Qaeda operatives. And then you say, wait a minute. Okay, so these are the guys who supposedly, you know, allegedly, and I like to say allegedly, attacked us on 9/11. And we're sponsoring them, you know, and this doesn't raise any red flags for anyone.
We only have about 6 minutes left in the program this afternoon. You listen to In Context, our live public affairs call-in show on WPKN. Give us a ring at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756.
I think that the constant changing of who the enemy is and who is our friend is much like the 2 minutes of hate in 1984,
yes,
when they just flash up the image of Emmanuel Goldstein and just say, this is your enemy. You just expel all of your hatred on this person and just continue to love the government for protecting you from this person.
Sure,
they just constantly change
Osama bin Laden.
Who the enemy is. It's Osama bin Laden. It's Saddam Hussein. It's Joseph Kony. It's Gaddafi. You know, it's all these different people. They're the enemy. They're the person that you hate. They flash the image, and then now it's somebody else. We got that guy. He's dead. Now it's someone else.
So what do we need?
And we're never safe.
We need a new foreign policy. We need a new defense policy that protects the interests of the nation and the interests of the American people, not putting first the interests of oil companies and service firms like Halliburton and military arms manufacturers.
Or the interests of the state of Israel.
Right?
I mean, you know, I've heard that argued many, many times as people say, well, you know, we got to go defend
Israel. They're our only friend.
They're our only friend. And you know what? When you start putting the interests of your nation behind somebody else, doesn't matter whether they're your ally or not, we're militarily in no position to go to war with Iran, be dragged into a war with Russia, and watch a million Americans die for some foreign country. I'm sorry, but my country, my constitution is the constitution of the United States. I'm a citizen of the United States, not a citizen of the state of Israel. The Israelis want to go fight a war against Iran. That's fine. Let their citizens fight. If their citizens want to go fight a war, let their citizens fight. Let their soldiers die. I don't want to see American soldiers, people who swore allegiance, same flag I love, dying for some other country.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Got another call?
Yeah, we got.
All right. Go ahead. Grab it. And just to back that up, I think that Israel has the second most nukes in the world, right?
I think they're top five.
They have between 400 and 800 nuclear warheads,
which is never mentioned in the mainstream.
No, and
media.
It's actually it's supposed to be top secret, but it's been leaked.
They deny it.
The number is we don't know.
Well, Mordecai Vanunu, who announced and revealed it to the world, spent years in solitary confinement. I think he's back in jail.
Just a second. What's your name?
Yeah, he has between Israel has between 400 and 800 nuclear warheads. United States has several thousand. Obviously, Russia and China have have many as well. Europe has a lot, but there's nukes everywhere. The world is awash with nuclear warheads.
Oh, gosh. North Korea, we know for a fact, has the bomb. Israel has the
bomb.
They're
just working on the delivery.
Exactly. Pakistan has the bomb. India. North Korea actually has the ability to, because they have a bomb itself, I mean, you drop it in a truck, drive it in South Korea.
Yeah, you could just drive it, right.
And this, we have a phone call, actually. This is John from New Haven. Go ahead, John.
Hey,
you're on the
calling,
air with WPKN.
John.
Hi. Well, I thought it was funny to say that Dick Cheney now has a heart.
Very good, John.
No longer a black hole.
Yeah, well, we're going to see what happens, but we're probably not expecting very much. There was a bill passed and signed into law by Obama recently that I was really disappointed about, because it inhibits free speech around government functions or political rallies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very good, John.
And I think it's in general, it falls the fact that the Congress in the United States tends to keep going its own way while dragging us off on issues. The oil company subsidies and whatnot, the aid to Israel, it's all still there. Nothing really changes. I'm not against aid to Israel. I just think that when our Congress and our Senate and our President can sign a bill into law that's definitely against the Constitution, somebody's been pulling the wool over our eyes for quite a while about the righteousness of what people are doing.
I'm really glad you brought that new law to our attention.
Yes.
It's frightening. It's so unnoticed. It's just right under the radar.
As I understand it, the national security officials can declare any place that a federal government official is visiting to be some kind of sensitive
national security location,
so that if you were to go there with a sign protesting the war, they could arrest you and put you
away. Even if it's
on
just a T-shirt or the bumper sticker on your car.
They could put you away on a felony charge for disrupting an important national security event.
I'm thinking specifically of the conventions.
That's right.
Yes.
I'm thinking, in fact, that what they're going to do is lock everybody up who breaks this law at all the political functions that are going to occur from now on.
That's a very good point, John.
Or the G8 or any NATO summit,
exactly.
The UN.
Exactly. Yeah. They have outlawed political protest unless it falls under permitted status.
I mean, look what happened in Pittsburgh when the G20 was there a couple of years ago. It was sound cannons and those secret arrests where they were just driving up with cars and throwing people in.
And there were mass arrests in New York City at the Democratic Convention? I mean, the Republican
Convention. And they even moved the one in Chicago to Camp David now. So no one can protest.
Right.
There is a tendency in this country to have learned from its mistakes, and unfortunately the people who learn are the ones who want to control the rest of us.
They're learning very well, yes.
Well, we got less than a minute, so
thank you very much for your call, John.
Thanks. All right, so find us on Facebook, facebook.com/incontextreport. Go to the YouTube channel. It's In Context Report. You can find all of our videos there. We do the weekly Liberty News and the War Report, cover everything in detail, show you the graphs, the maps, charts, anything that you need to know.
And we're on every Monday except the first Monday of the month.
Right.
So we will be on next on April the 9th with David Samuels, founder of...
We will
of
not be on next week.
We're 2 weeks from now with David Samuels, founder of Connecticut's Community Party. We're going to talk about racial profiling in Connecticut and also public banking.
Yeah, so give a call and give us your opinion on that one. That'll sure to be charged.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks
for joining us. All right, talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Take care, citizens.